Chapter 15. Promise. Sabo. Chapter warnings for implications of murder, canon typical child abuse, Sabo's parents, cannibalism, gore, general creepiness, etc. The walls of Goa have stood for 1,000 years and will stand for 1,000 more, or so the legends say, whispered in the allies of Edgetown and declared loudly from the pedestals of Hightown. They aren't wrong, not entirely. Goa's walls, old, decaying, but uncracking, something's locked inside, have stood for 1,000 years, and maybe 1,000 more. Sabo, 3, and watching from beside his father's knee as Edgetown inhabitants walk near the walls and never come back, knows it will hardly last 100 more. There's old magic in the walls, entrapping and tangling, like something got trapped there and never quite managed to find the key out. It's something not quite dark and not quite light. Sometimes, on moonless nights, Sabo feels as if it is watching him. His parents tell him that the walls keep him safe. Bad things are out there, Sabo. Don't you want to make Mommy and Daddy happy and stay alive? But Sabo always wonders why they don't tread near it. Why no one does. Is it the presence? The not-quite thing that stares at him in the night and sings songs of breaking and ruin, of young kings and ruined empires. Hightown is not a real town, or at least Sabo doesn't think it is. Everything's pretending here, hinging not on their own politics, but the outside world they don't ever speak of. They don't speak of harsh words to perfect children behind golden doors. They don't speak of the occasional too hard slap. And they certainly don't speak of the pointed ears adorning each of their heads, or the wings shifted under clothes. Or they do, and it's applauded and praised if you have gold lining your pockets, and cursed if you have a single smudge of dirt on you. It's pretend, because Sabo doesn't know what's real or not. Does he do as the king does, and shed his cloak and sleeves to show the world the wings upon his back, crafted of gold and iron and metal of not here, show them the spots of glowing blue dancing along his shoulder blades, and how pointed his teeth can get if he smiles just so? Or does he do as his parents do, as the rest of the country does, and hide, hide, hide? There's a man Sabo sees when his family rides a carriage to the docks to greet some royalty or other. Sabo wasn't paying attention, too distracted by the itchy cloth tying his wings to his back and hidden under a weighted cloak. But he does see the man, because the man is so very different. Sparks of gold and shimmering elsewhere scatter across his limbs as he walks bare-chested towards the gate of the city. His back is bloody. 2 gouges, flesh torn and horrendous, are placed in the spot where Sabo's own winged limbs attach. There's no pain in his face, even as people shout at him from the street corners, young children tossing rocks at his face. It's only a serene calmness as he looks straight into Sabo's eyes. His mother doesn't even try to hide him from sight. Ah, he didn't follow the rules. Shame, she sniffs, and the carriage continues onward. Sabo suddenly gains the sense that something is terrible, near irreversibly wrong. Everything's a contradiction. He doesn't wonder if he should bare his back anymore. His parents have always told him to be quiet, to listen, to obey, to put your wings down and stand up straight. Can't you follow the rules for once, you summoned child? And Sabo hates it, but can't protest against them, because rules and laws are what keeps the society of Hightown together, and if someone were to break it, well, someone always wants to try children's blood to keep them young. Sabo understands it all now because he's 5, and he's figured it out. He's figured it all out. Have you ever been trapped inside a fairy ring? An old one? No? Well, it goes something like this. There's a circle of rocks, incomplete and alluring, inviting travelers in. In this circle is a wondrous life of peace and serenity. So people go and dance. But then, so suddenly, somebody decides to shut the entrance, slide a rock into a place that should never be filled, let the power wash over and drag the darkness in. Suddenly, the people aren't dancing anymore. Suddenly, they're puppets on a string, dancing because stopping means death. And continuing does too. But maybe if they're pretty enough, perfect enough, they'll be the exception. They never are. Suddenly, there are rules and laws. Suddenly, a promise is binding by the soul, not just the heart. And wings are wrong and lights are bad. Suddenly, the people aren't happy being themselves, being the people who wanted to dance in the light and life, but want to be like them instead. Those outside the circle. Suddenly, only the powerful are worthy to have limbs of freedom and rules bind everyone else. Because if there's no order, no truth, then this kingdom of deceit shall eat itself in its wild dance of slavery. Thus, the circle is endless around Goa, making more within itself. Because the people keep on wanting to dance and dance and dance. But oh, they never truly will. Sabo doesn't want to dance anymore. In the dark of the night, Sabo shucks off the heavy, long shirt his parents swaddle him in and looks at the mark between his shoulder blades in a mirror. It glows ever so faintly, and Sabo remembers what his parents like to call him when he's being impolite. Summoned child. He touches his ears and wonders what his parents try to imitate, what race exists beyond these walls, what they try to be so bad that his mother cut her ears and bound her wings. Why do they try to pretend? Three circles mean three gates to break, but Sabo has been nothing but persistent since the day he was born. Oh, Outlook, look, he has the markings. What? He was summoned. He should be like the outside. Witch, what is this? I told you my powers are limited. The Witch of the Mountain has all the true capabilities. Damn you. Out. Didi, kill the thing. What? You heard me. But we already told the neighbors that we were with child. What happens when there's no child? He's lucky enough that the highest one doesn't bind him, yet, if his father has anything to say about it. But Hightown likes to call him back at night. Sabo knows, though. He knows the weakness within. He runs away to Edgetown on a moonless night, and that's his first mistake. Because the next night, the pale moon bright beams are just enough to illuminate what stands at the edges of the outer wall. The streets aren't safe at night, and not because of any human presence. And Sabo spends the night walking the line between known and unknown. The alley he nests in has a view of the sea, normally a comfort for Sabo. But tonight, as he wraps his wings around him, he can only think of the haze of mist looming over the water gates like a resting tiger. The white lights blinking lazily at him from the harbor don't help either. The harbor lights are normally gold. A night in the cold and a night in the streets. A night using a blade of iron and cold silver to chip a small hole in the wall. Break the barrier, break what has been set, and Sabo will be free from what calls him back. And Sabo is ready to venture out. He's never been out before. What will it be like? A shining paradise like his parents fantasize when they invite foreigners to dine? Or a terror born of hell like his parents whisper about in the shadows? Will it be warm and inviting, or freezing and alienating? Sabo wants to know. No one notices him as he approaches the ivy-covered gates at the edge of the city. They're rarely opened, even by Edgetown inhabitants, and the bronze along the edges has eroded with age. There are no guards, nothing to prevent Sabo from cutting his hand open and pressing it against the wall. There's a creature in the walls, don't you know? Fairy circles aren't just made of stone and magic. I promise, he whispers in his mind, feeling like any audible noise would break the eerie silence that's fallen over the land around him. I shall bring ruin. A shift, and his hand isn't there anymore. Blood drips from his open wrist, plinking against the stone ground. Drip. 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 There's no pain, only a numbness settling deep within Sabo's chest as he stares at the empty place. Oh, he says, the first audible word he's said in this realm tonight, and takes a step forward. He didn't expect the shadows to be warm. A promise made, a promise kept. Break these walls, and passage shall be granted. He wakes up surrounded by fire and screams. A brief thought crosses his mind, wondering if he awoke in hell, but a look at the bright sky destroys the notion. He's not in hell. He's outside. And all that remains of his promise is the scar wrapping around his wrist, like it's been there for years. Not a, how long has it been? Whatever. He's outside, and it's so much more than he thought it would be. Here are the rules, unspoken and followed in the circling kingdom of Goa. 1. Do not rebel. Broken. 2. Do not bare your back in public. Only the king is worthy. Broken. The coat falls from his shoulders like water. 3. Do not go outside the walls. Broken. He's free. It takes him a month to get used to the outside. In that time, a time of starving, of cold and terror, Sabo learns and sees and doesn't mind not being seen anymore. In Gray Terminal, there are people who have washed up on the shores and never quite managed to escape, instead hiding underneath homes of broken logs and people like Sabo, with the blood of darkness running through their veins. It's easy enough to tell the difference. In Goa, traits such as theirs were shunned and hidden, though they could never quite manage it. A curse that only royalty could wield, and the absence of it was praised in children. Outside, the people thrive with it. Tails and scales and claws and wings creep by Sabo's hiding spot every night, glowing eyes in every corner, and the hazy mist of Goa's walls never quite manages to seize them in their grasp. The people are starving and dirty and terrible, but they are prideful. They scare Sabo, because Sabo's been trapped for so long that he's so weak. But he's learning. He'll be proud, too. Can't you see how sharp his teeth are getting? Despite this, though, they don't leave the terminal. There's something in the woods, they whisper. Something dangerous. And the Lord of the Coast patrols the waters for any tasty snack. Sabo doesn't disagree. He sees the looming beast and glowing red eyes that don't dare tread past the torches on the edge of the trash heaps, and the footprints, 5 times as large as anyone in Gray Terminal, that do. He doesn't sleep much for that first month. But Sabo learns that they know how to enter the kingdom without getting caught up in its tangling web. An underground passage hidden under Trash Heap Mount. A gate guarded by a sleeping dog that can be bribed with the right type of meat to get in. There are a lot of disappearances in Gray Terminal. He doesn't dare go back. Not yet, at least. Not until he meets Ace. In a place like the terminal, the people have nothing better to do than eat, sleep, fight, survive, and talk to remind them of something other than their miserable existence. It's no surprise that rumors run rampant, but one does more than the others. Hey, did you hear it happened again? Damn, Devil Child is back? Burned down a shack, killed a man, stole our goods, beat up 20 men. Isn't he only 5? There's a child, they say, that lives in the woods. He's half beast and half monster, half hellfire and half killer. He has eyes like the pits of hell and hands that burn anything he touches. And if you give him an answer he doesn't like, he'll kill you. He likes to go into the city a lot. Passage is needed, after all. Sabo doesn't want to meet him, but at the same time, he's so goddamn curious that it's killing him not to seek him out. In the end, though, it's not a choice, because Ace takes one look at his shiny wings and socks him right in the face. It's stupidly strong for a 5-year-old, and maybe Sabo should be smarter than this, but instead of running away, he punches right back. What did you do that for, you asshole? Sabo waves the pipe he found threateningly at him. The person, creature, in front of him is his height, but with half-charred tan skin and fire licking up through the cracks in his skin. His hands are sharp, and his freckles that would have made him childish are glowing hot red. Black hair, matted with blood, his, covers his eyes slightly, and there's dirt all over him. But what Sabo can't look away from is his eyes. He looks just like Sabo did when he looked in the mirror. Because I felt like it, asshole. Now give me your goggles. What? Hell no. Back off, you dick. He doesn't care about his eyes anymore. Just beating this idiot into the dirt because in hindsight, that punch didn't hurt that much. Just stung a little. No. Then I'll just take them. Sabo readies his claws and twirls his pipe with little skill. The blue patches on his shoulders glow and wings flare threateningly from where they hover over his back. Try it, flame freak! The dust doesn't settle for another 2 hours. You ain't half bad. Neither are you. Truce? Truce. A promise made. A promise kept. Ace doesn't attack Sabo anymore. In Gray Terminal, it seems to be a form of protection. People still try to gut you if you talk to them or tread too near their territory, but Sabo doesn't have to worry about people attacking him unprovoked. Unless it's the pirate gang that settled on the shores, but he's too underneath their notice anyway. It's a nice life. Fun, even. He and Ace sometimes team up to get more loot, to grab food, or even fight. It's less like a truce and more like an alliance now. Sabo learns some more. He knows when Ace's grip will burn and when it will crack, when he's safe to touch and when the fire inside heats up the world outside. He understands when Ace will punch and when he will kick, how to move in tandem, how Ace will shift ever so subtly to keep from hitting his wings, and how Ace likes staring at the glowing things when they see the sunrise together. He learns. But it's not until they start sparring on the cliffside that he learns the truth. Do you have a dream, Ace? Yeah? Why? 'Cause I think I figured mine out. There's a book hidden underneath Sabo's hideout, old and fraying, but sturdy in its cover and pages. It's a captain's log, a pirate captain's log, and suddenly Sabo has an inkling to what he wants. Yeah? What is it? I think I'm going to be a pirate. Really? Me too. Hey, Sabo, I have an idea. And a friendship is formed. His first, and it's a so much bigger promise than he's ever made before. The first thing Ace does is take him into the forest, and the first thing he tells him is, "Don't look back." Sabo doesn't question it and follows him in. It's quiet at first, normal, but Sabo notes the wide berth Ace gives the paw prints in the path and copies him. Soon the path isn't there anymore, and the sky isn't either, tall trees consuming it all. There are odd sounds surrounding him, creeping in, hot breaths running down his back, but Sabo doesn't look back, even when one of the voices sounds like a human scream. Ace looks back at him, gives him a wicked smirk, and presses a finger to his lips and dashes off. In silence, with a completely wild grin, Sabo dashes after him. He ignores the deer he sees three times, each time more rotted than the next, till all that's left is bleached bones, and ignores the giant wolf with six eyes and the caves they play before. Ace jumps to the trees in the game of impromptu tag they started, and in a spur of instinct, Sabo flies after him, wings beating with a power he didn't know he had. Ace laughs, and it's like a spell broken. It's like acceptance, like the final binds that tie him to the circle of Goa have broken, and he's free to be free in this monstrous jungle of half-dead things. He can look back now, but he doesn't feel like it anymore. Sabo laughs, too, and tackles Ace to the ground, tumbling in weirdly red mud together. He could get used to this. He does get used to it. For the next 5 years, he and Ace know the best way to get to Edgetown and all the food there. Apparently, the dog likes it when its offerings are drunk and confused. No, to combine heat with flight and claws with claws. Sabo knows Ace uses the lights scattered across his limbs as a nightlight. Sometimes. He learns Ace lives with the Witch of the Mountain, that he has a grandpa with wings different than Sabo's, with 1,000 eyes and fists of love that are really fists of pain. He learns whose son Ace is, and Ace learns his heritage. They don't care, though. But if Sabo's a little more brutal to anyone who curses the child of the Pirate King, and Ace will subtly cover up the mysterious appearance of Outlook's second child, the same night his other fled, fairy circles, fairy rules, soul for soul and child for child, this one is a much better fit anyway. Then no one is going to say anything. Sabo gets used to the forest, the jungle with its trees that blot out light anywhere, but the deadliest center, with its alligators with three mouths and tigers that sometimes have human hands and faces, but still so bloody. He gets used to the scratches, gouges more like, that appear in the wood around their pirate stash, and the dregs and the dirt that are bigger than anything he's seen so far. He looks back, sometimes, when he's feeling brave. Each time he gets the feeling that he's barely escaped death. Sabo gets used to flight, the way he can't quite get above the trees. Are they endless in this forest? But he can fly ace over trash heaps and stone walls. He gets used to wings being free and not bound to his back, and the claws along his fingertips that he can bear proudly without fear. The people of Grey Terminal start whispering about two devil children now, one of the woods and one of the city, born of hell and hellraisers, who don't have the morality even people in the East Blue have. Sabo's oddly proud the first time he catches the whispers. They call him Fallen and Fey, and can't you see how his wings have turned from gold? He's just as feared as Ace now, maybe more, because unlike Ace, he sleeps in the same place as the Grey Terminal folk. It's all good. Then it all changes when Ace comes back with stories about a new boy in the Mountain Witch's hut, made of rubber and hunger more than anyone can satisfy. The kid starts chasing Ace through the forest. Sabo is surprised he hasn't died yet. He, meaning the brat. Luffy? Was that his name? Of course. Ace tells him how he falls down ravines and gets crushed by falling logs and eaten by crocodiles, but every time he comes back alive. Ugh. In whispers, Ace tells him how he kicked the kid down the ravine, the one with the wolves at the bottom, the ones whose limbs are too thin and claws too long, how he came back a week later covered in blood, too much just to come from the scratches along his limbs. He whispers how Luffy's movements are often too quick to see, and how the shadows bend toward him. How Luffy's not quite monstrous in the same way they are. It's fine, until Luffy finally manages to make it to the edge of the woods, and hears about the treasure. Of course the brat would want to be a pirate, shouts it to the world. They tie him to the tree, and it's as he's crying for them not to kill him, Sabo starts to see him. His teeth are sharp, and even though the veil shouldn't really affect him, Sabo can't really focus on him entirely. His limbs are weird, but Sabo's sure that's just the rubber. But there's the oddest haze above his head, and his teeth are sharp as daggers. His skin tends to fade out of focus. Is he scaled or furred? Sabo can't tell. And his tears aren't quite the color they should be. But he's loud, so they have to shut him up. But as they prepare to kill him, the men from Blue Jam's crew, the one people who aren't afraid of the devil children, round the corner. And there's nothing Sabo can do as they take Luffy, who refuses to spill their secret anyway. They move the treasure, but no one's come to check the hiding place. Sabo's always been a smart child. That was the one thing his parents got right about it. So he easily puts two and two together and... oh no. Shit. They arrive in crashing commotion, but when they look around, only Porkemi is still standing. There's red smattered all over the room and several limbs without bodies on the floor. Porkemi's terrified, his spiked gloved hands bloody, but so is Luffy. Blood in his mouth and many, many bleeding holes and cuts ooze sluggishly. He's hanging from the ceiling, wrapped in chains that dig into his skin. Seemingly overkill for a 7-year-old, but... you killed them, you ate them, you monster! You're the worst of all the beasts there are, you unnatural freak! Devil fruit, teeth, and whatever's going on with that weird body of yours, how dare you! By Porkemi's words, it might not be. Whatever. Luffy clearly hasn't spoken, even if he is terrifying. So Ace and Sabo have to save him. A debt's a debt. He goes down easily enough, a huge bite mark in his leg slowing him down. He's not dead, not yet, but maybe he'll pass on the message to Blue Jam that they're called the Devil Children for a reason. Sabo feels Luffy smile blindingly into his back from his position on Sabo's back and thinks maybe it's worth it. Luffy becomes their friend and makes Ace want to live, only a little, in the span of 5 minutes, after they patch up his bruises and holes and cuts, so he's not that bad. They carefully don't mention the other three thugs that were with Porkemi, and only ask about his devil fruit power. Sabo wonders why being alone hurts him so much more than anything. The pain in his eyes was something he hadn't even seen in Ace. They make their way to the witch's hut after that, because if Blue Jam isn't terrified of them, he'll be after them, or maybe even make a hunt. It's been done before, for them, so Sabo can't live in Gray Terminal anymore. It's a good thing he and Ace put their most valuable stuff with the pirate stash, or else Sabo wouldn't have his logbook anymore. The Witch of the Mountain has been said to live there for 1,000 years. Ace tells Sabo that's a lie because Dadan's just super ugly, not super old. But seeing the mountain hut, strong and sturdy with marks of age in the old corner and power wreathing about its borders, a sense powerful and dark, he has some doubts. Doesn't stop him from calling her a hag to her face, though. If he's gonna live here, it's gonna be on his terms. She's mad, tells him she's a bandit, not a hag or a witch, but he doesn't miss how she whispers something over him at night, something that makes the pressing sense of the border disappear. It's good. Soon, the people speak of three devil children, start calling them the three devils, and Sabo can't help but laugh in joy at it. Here, out in the forest, surrounded by two children with dreams just like his, he can finally breathe without the force of Goa's circle pressing down on him. Not even a memory can hold him back. With Luffy and Ace, he trains his skills, becomes stronger than he ever was before. Ace is still on equal footing with him, but Luffy has absolutely no control over his devil fruit. It's comical at times, other times terrifying because he rockets himself into the river, the idiot. But that's okay. Ace and Sabo will help him. What they don't mention is how Dadan takes him away sometimes, when the bandits are going on a raid. How Luffy isn't afraid of the beasts of the jungle. How the rotting deer bows its head to him as they go past. How Luffy gets quiet when they mention he can't that much. How he's always, always hungry. How he can move faster than Ace and Sabo if he wills it occasionally. And how his claws leave huge gouges in the dirt. How his eyes flash red and he becomes a little less Luffy and a little more beast. They don't like to talk about it. The useful thing about Luffy is that with a third person, they can look like an adult when they sneak into Edgetown and get free food. Dine and Dashes are great. Actually cooked food. Could it get any better? Something that wasn't Magra's cooking? The secret useful thing about Luffy is that they don't need an offering anymore to get past the guardian of the hidden gate. They tried the first time, but Luffy chomped at the beast, the flesh-eating beast, and it cowered before him and let them through. Luffy was kind enough to let the beast still have its snack. This time they're eating at a place that Ace swears is fantastic. And it is. So they've eaten through 100 bowls and they're on their 101st when the tentacled cook finally discovers them. Sabo's laughing as he shoots out the window, flapping wings to keep him above his brothers as they crash to the ground, food still shoved in their cheeks. He's flying, 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 and everyone's staring and laughing, but he doesn't care so much. But then, oh, but then, Sabo? He tells his friends who he is, fearing the crash and fall. These kids he stares at have been feral from birth, but Sabo was part of the fairy ring, the curse of Goa, where everyone's trapped, but they don't care. And Sabo knows he's found something great, so he tells them of another great secret, of how he's going to see the world as a pirate and write it all down and publish his captain's log, and maybe, just maybe, change the world so nothing like Goa exists. He shouts it to the cliffs, to the sea, to the island, and worlds itself. And he thinks the hazy being lounging on the walls of Goa nods in approval. Ace goes next, voice just as proud, and vows to be a famous pirate with his name spread across the world. Then Luffy goes, face brave and bold as he declares in a voice and tone Sabo's sure he will hear 1,000 times again, "I'm going to be the king of the pirates!" And well, doesn't the world shake at the flames Sabo sees above Luffy's head? An hour later, and Ace is pouring sake out for all of them. "Don't you guys know," he says proudly, finishing the last pour, "that when men share a drink, they become brothers forever?" Luffy grins, eyes wide, and Sabo can't help but mirror it, taking a cup for himself. "Two brothers," Ace cries and holds out his cup. "Two brothers," Sabo cries in return, the same as Luffy, and then they throw back their drinks, laughing like they have nothing to worry about. And inside, Sabo feels the promise taking place, wreathing around his heart and binding him tight to these people beside him. No, he won't ever forget them, lose them, be without them. This vow is his promise, and it's the one rule Goa has that Sabo hasn't been able to break. A promise made, a promise kept, after all. Now that they're brothers, Sabo also has a new grandpa. He doesn't like his new grandpa, but at least he's officially part of the family. Garp, Gramps, sorry, makes a good pillow anyway. His wings are super soft. They run wild and rampant still, even more than before. Goa Kingdom, High Town, everything is a far-off memory now. No one ever tries to rein them in, lets them be feral and free as they please. Makino's the only one who really tries anyway, but no one ever wants to make her mad, so they listen to her. Mama Kino, Luffy sometimes calls her. Mama. And Sabo wonders if it's what a motherly touch should feel like. Sabo figures out how to coexist with his brothers, more than just sharing a room, but now a treehouse, everything. He knows that Ace likes to use his glowing spots as a nightlight, nothing new, and Luffy is endlessly fascinated with his wings and his stories. He knows that the biggest piece of meat, even if it's not the best one, should go to Luffy or else he gets twitchy, and you can't let Luffy be the last one in the treehouse or else the beasts will creep in. He knows that Ace is dumb and will try to start fights with the true beasts, but if you chuck Luffy at him, they won't always fight back. And if they do, and they can't take them down, they should run to Dadan's as fast as they can. He learns that words hurt, and his brothers have some bad views on themselves. He'll curse poor Kemi for the rest of his days, but he's here, so that's okay. Sabo knows that they can be free. But the people of the Grand Line whisper about the East Blue. They say that it's a sea of monsters, and they aren't wrong. Not at all. But that also means even the smallest ones are monsters as well. There's one winter, a harsh one, when Sabo is 11. There's not enough food to go around, and people would rather starve to death than face the cold. He and Ace fail to notice Luffy getting twitchy, fail to notice how his eyes are crazed and how he doesn't meet their own eyes and instead remains fixated on the ground. Don't notice until Luffy lunges at one of the visiting bandits and Garp is too slow to catch him and, oh hell, the blood. Sabo's not proud that he can't look at Luffy or be defenseless against him for a month after that. Fairy rings don't like it when their prey escapes, don't you know? His father sends out lackeys, threatening his brothers, and he has no choice but to let them lead him back to the dance as they shove him over the gates. A promise made, a promise kept. He's back in hell, and there's someone in the place that was never meant for him, Stelly. So why do they want him back? Why can't he be free? He made the deal, didn't he? A promise made, a promise kept. His wings are bound so tightly, and his shirt's covering up what can glow, and Sabo feels like he can't breathe. He can't. Is he the only one who hears the screams outside as they burn the terminal down? Don't they know that the monsters are inside, not outside? A promise made, a promise kept. Sabo's not a part of Goa anymore. He can't be, not like this. He's decided. He had a plan, a promise. But now there are only two promises he swears he'll keep. One to the being of the circle that's been so quiet now that he's back and not half feral. I shall bring ruin. And two, the most important, to brothers. He sends a letter off and prepares to leave, trusting that his brothers will live and he'll meet them both out on the Grand Line. A promise made, a promise kept. But what happens when a promise breaks? He has a flag above his head, a compass in hand, and a boat and waves beneath his feet. He sails out of Goa's harbor, the only safe one, sure that he can make it past the big ship that's rolling past him. He waves at the island, ignores how the shadows reach back for him. The wings on his back stretch, and finally, he's free. Fire. There's so much fire. It burns. Oh, God, it burns. Help. He's drowning. Water everywhere. His dream. No. Ace, Luffy, help. Darkness. Who am I? A promise made. A promise unkept. Who knew a fae who didn't keep to the rules?